2 days later, Hank and I schlepped back to Philadelphia. During the train ride, he reminisced about the body surfing, but all I could think of was my poor aunt and the Ganev she'd married. On leaving the rooming house, I'd given the owner a sealed shoebox with my aunt's address and an enclosed note. "Who stole your purse intended well, but landed on the road to hell? No curse, I beg, directed me. My conscience feels the third degree." The owner promised to personally deliver it the next morning, a favor for which I gave him 5 smackers. Taking a cab from the train station to the boatyards, we happily found our boat repaired and ready to go. The Daedalus was a lean, rakish craft, powered by 3 surplus Army Liberty airplane engines, capable, in smooth waters, of up to 55 knots. Placed side by side in the cockpit, the engines left little room for anything else but the fuel drums, navigational equipment, and 2 narrow bunks. Stripped to its bare essentials, the 75-foot boat had a hold just barely capable of storing the 600 cases we'd be bringing in from Rum Row. At first, Rodman feathered the engines, listening carefully to their hum in order to detect any defects. Satisfied that the pistons were pumping smoothly, he gently opened the throttle and let the craft start to run. Following the Delaware to the bay, we headed northeast. The morning sun rose in a radiant arc, making the water sparkle like a sea of sapphires. I could understand why primitive peoples thought the earth flat and the sun an omnipotent god. It looked as if the ocean suddenly stopped at the foot of this towering light. September, the season of hurricanes, had so far behaved. What did not behave was the Coast Guard. As soon as we came around the Cape May lighthouse on the point, a naval cutter signaled us to stop. They wanted to see our papers. But once they saw the size of our engines, they ordered us to follow them into shore for questioning. While we remained at anchor and while Hank explained that he was a sportsman who enjoyed boat racing, I saw cutters bring in several smuggling boats. Some of these vessels, I was told, carried more than booze. They also brought in heroin, cocaine, morphine, and illegal Chinese immigrants. The forlorn Asians were led off the ship dressed in rags and thin as skeletons. Desperate to earn a living wage, they were trying to reach the U.S. not because here they would have to work less, but because America offered the chance to grow rich beyond the dreams of avarice. Wasn't that why warehouses were filled with liquor and new ones a building, and why Rodman was convinced that money could make a farmer's boy a gentleman? After slipping the chief officer a C-note, Hank rejoined the boat, and we immediately swept away from shore. We reached the Atomica in no time, since our engines were now firing full blast. McCoy and his crew helped us load liquor from the Atomica to the Daedalus. Sunburned and tired, we ate a hearty meal with McCoy and told him about our run-in with the Coast Guard. A light rain had begun to fall. Unable to keep from dozing, I excused myself, went below, and spent the night in a hammock, swaying ever so gently. Some of AR's boys were to meet us the next night on a deserted beach at Montauk Point. Because of the lurking naval boats, we would wait until dusk before making a dash for shore. But early that evening, a naval cutter anchored a few yards from the Atomica. "Get that tub out of my sight," bellowed McCoy, "or I'll turn my guns on you. We're in international waters, so keep your distance." The captain of the cutter said, "If the speedboat that docked alongside you last night intends to bring liquor into the States, tell him to forget it. We have you covered like a blanket." McCoy laughed and said his sister had come to visit, parading me on the deck. I had my doubts about the wisdom of showing me off, because now I was known to the feds. In the wee hours, with the skies gray overhead and fog rolling in, we set out to deliver the Daedalus's load. Stealthily, Rodman ran the boat on one engine with our running lights off. Although we avoided the cutter parked on our doorstep, we had no way of knowing where the other naval craft were positioned. Suddenly, A darting searchlight pierced the fog and crisscrossed in front of the boat. Rosamond quickly turned the Daedalus out to sea. We'd not been discovered, but I had no doubt that if we couldn't make the 3-mile crossing in time, we'd be answering the questions of some Coast Guard official. As we neared Montauk Point, a Coast Guard craft, not a cutter but a speedboat stamped Gypsy, appeared out of the night to give chase. Ordered to cut our engine and prepare a clamp for towing, we looked at each other for a second, and then I said, "Let her rip." I was cocksure that we had the power to pull away from the Gypsy, but what I didn't count on was that the police boat also had Liberty engines and no load of liquor to haul. Rodman piloted around the point, and with all 3 engines thundering and the boat trailing foam, made directly for the East River. Lights could be seen on the land, even though a heavy mist hung over the river. As we shot past Throg's Neck and Ferry Point, where the river narrowed, the swell from our waves set the anchored boats all a-bobbing. The Gypsy opened fire with machine guns, causing me to hit the deck and reach for my bent silver dollar. One bullet splintered aboard no farther than 3 feet away. A cannon shot landed wide, creating a great splash off the starboard. The Gypsy's searchlight clung to us like a cobweb. Heading straight for Rikers Island, Rodman waited until the last second before turning. With the rocks almost upon us, he spun the wheel faster than a con man working a shell game, momentarily throwing the Gypsy off course. We went west and the Gypsy east. Rodman, thinking the police would try to intercept us at the south end of the island, immediately turned our boat around and pointed it in the direction from which we'd just come. But that decision proved wrong, because the Gypsy also turned around and came bearing down upon us from the north end of the island. Once again, Hank was forced to turn the boat and head for Lower Manhattan. The Gypsy kept firing, waking the waterfront. Lights snapped on along the shore. Our heavy haul was taking its toll. The police boat was gaining. "Quick!" yelled Rodman, the roar of the engines and the wake of the water making it difficult to hear. "Throw some of the wooden crates into their path!" I leapt to the hold, and in my fear didn't even notice their weight as I tossed overboard at least a dozen cases of booze, which were tossing about on the waves. With her cannons and machine guns blazing wildly, the Gypsy ran into several cases, causing a terrific crash and leaving behind a sinking mass of splinters and broken glass. "More!" hollered Rodman, so I just kept heaving. Ward's Island appeared up ahead. Hank tried again to force the police boat to go one way while he went the other, but the Gypsy stayed right on our tail as we raced past Lower Manhattan and under a number of bridges. Desperate to shake our pursuers, Rodman attempted one more trick. At Governor's Island, he turned west and made a series of large S-curves, enabling the Coast Guard to drive straight ahead and shorten the distance between them and us. Rodman, familiar with the shoals in these waters, cut around some underwater rocks close to shore. The Coast Guard, in their attempt to overtake us, failed to swing wide. What happened next was just downright scary. Their boat hit the submerged rocks at high speed, shot out of the water like a flying fish, fell on one side, and skidded along the sand until one great rock ripped through the hull, exposing her ribs. The engine, its pipes bent and wrapped in every direction, looked like a piece of modern sculpture. One man flew through the air like a doll, rolling over and over among the rocks and the sand. Another lay motionless. According to the next day's papers, he had suffered a mild concussion. 2 others staggered to their feet and swore at us. Rodman, having cut his engines to assess the mayhem, sailed close to shore. While he peered from the cabin, I stood on deck. Mistake! The man on the shore saw me clearly. A great roar suddenly drowned out their curses. Steam shot high in the air. The waves created by the impact had swept over the Gypsy's red-hot mangled engines, causing a blast that dismembered what remained of the boat. It was time for a powder. Rodman bore down on the throttle and continued along the east side of the island, shooting through the narrows and lower New York Bay, aiming for Coney Island, in particular for the area around the West 17th Street Bridge and the Brooklyn Borough Gas Company, the best place, he said, to land the merchandise. Docking at Sea Gate, at the west end of the beach, we were so close to the elegant Atlantic Yacht Club, we could hear the small talk taking place on the terrace. "You stay with the boat," Rodman said, leaping onto the pier. "We need a place to stash all the booze. This is Frankie Yale territory. He's a big operator and a friend." As Rodman disappeared into the darkness, my overactive imagination was already envisioning the scene I feared would take place if the Coast Guard spotted the boat before morning. "Me, sir? I was just taking a late-night walk on the beach and came upon this deserted craft. The owner? I was just wondering that myself." During the chase, the gypsy had no doubt wired a description of the Daedalus to all the feds on land as well as sea. The New York waterways would be swarming with patrol boats by sunrise. My reveries were interrupted just before daybreak when two large trucks rolled up to the dock. Rodman and three young men, all wearing double-breasted suits and loud ties, dashed for the Daedalus and started transferring the cases from the hold to the trucks. At first, I failed to recognize one of the young men, Salvatore Zucanier. "I missed you, cutie," he said. "I'm not your cutie," I snapped. Balancing a case on each shoulder, he said, "Give me a break. I'll make life good for you." But I turned my back. Apparently, Zucania rented himself out to a number of hoods and went wherever the pickings were good. By the time the sun rose, inflaming the ocean and warming the surf, the two trucks had left, and Rodman had put the Daedalus into dry dock at a small shipyard on the banks of Coney Island Creek, where he told them to repaint the boat and rename her Henrietta. "You never whined once," remarked Rodman, a comment which I prize above all others to this day.